content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Deb Zuver for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to an edition of Community Connections. Every month, we'll share news and introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. Our guest today, I am delighted that Alan Chase can join us as we launch this first interview on Community Connections. Dr. Chase is a member of the Governor Moorhead School Alumni Association. He chairs the Governor Moorhead School Board of Trustees and runs the Envisioning Youth Empowerment Retreat, which is held at the Governor Moorhead School each summer. Dr. Chase is a graduate of the Governor Moorhead School. He pursued degrees in education in college, and his doctoral dissertation focused on educational policy as it relates to schools for the blind. Dr. Chase began working with students with visual impairments and other disabilities in 2005 on college transition and access through temporary state service and the nonprofit sector. He has served as a teacher, school administrator, and adjunct faculty member in both North Carolina and Tennessee. In 2008, Dr. Chase established a nonprofit organization for youth with visual impairments. Currently, he is lead administrator and co-director of the North Carolina Deafblind Project at the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. Envisioning Youth Empowerment Retreat is held at the Governor Moorhead School each summer. So welcome, Alan Chase. I am so glad that you can join us today. You've been involved in many aspects of education in North Carolina for a number of years, and as your bio attests, that we just heard many of the things that you're involved with, and with education, many aspects of it across the state and locally at Governor Moorhead. So what do you see as some of the current issues in education?
Yes, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here, and I just want to be able to share a little bit of insight into kind of where we are today and how the past got us here and maybe where we're going to go in the future.
Great.
So I want to take us back just a couple of decades ago. It seems like it was forever ago, but a couple of decades ago, we had the Governor Moorhead School for the Blind. The General Assembly directed that the state residential schools, the schools for the deaf and Governor Moorhead School, transition from the Department of Health and Human Services to the Department of Public Instruction. And when that shift occurred, the inner workings of all the programs that were housed under the Governor Moorhead School were dismantled and farmed out to various other areas within the Department of Public Instruction. And this is important because back during those times, the Governor Moorhead School, they had an on-campus program where they served students. They had an outreach program that served upwards of almost 1,000 students at times, where teachers would travel throughout the state and support students in their home school districts. And there was the Governor Moorhead Preschool Program, and that served approximately 500 students from birth to age 5. And so since that change, the trend that we're seeing is that there's less and less support for students with visual impairments across the state. The outreach program that I just mentioned doesn't exist anymore. And one of the priorities of the newly established Board of Trustees for the Governor Moorhead School is to reestablish that program so that the school can have a wider reach across the state.
Is there a plan in place or in process?
Yes. So currently the school is reallocating some positions to create some positioned specifically for outreach, and so that is currently underway. And we're also working with that ties back into the Governor Moorhead preschool program, because one thing that people don't really realize is that that structure, the structure of a statewide outreach program, is already in place. And so the Governor Moorhead preschool, which changed names during that transition years ago, is now called the Early Learning Sensory Support Program. They have teachers that live throughout the entire state and serve students from birth to age three. And so the infrastructure is there. Everything is there. All that we have to do is bring all those programs back under one umbrella, so there's a comprehensive, seamless service delivery for students with visual impairments across the entire state.
And do you feel there's support for that across the state, or is there still some barriers in place? How do you see it progressing?
I think that the barrier is just a lack of knowledge. I think that the supports would be there if people just knew about it. For example, you may have heard that there is a significant teacher shortage, and this is affecting students with and without disabilities all across the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I would venture to say that if school districts had access to teachers that could provide services to students with visual impairments, that they would take advantage of those opportunities. There's currently some legislation working its way through the General Assembly during the budget process that would do essentially what I just outlined for you. It would bring the Governor Moorhead preschool back to Governor Moorhead School, and then the infrastructure is already there. And then that would give the school the opportunity to then simply, with the current plan it has, to reallocate some positions to establish an outreach program. It would be a perfect opportunity to again for the school to serve students from birth all the way through high school statewide.
And what are some things you think would need to happen next? I heard you say that, you know, people need to know about this, and it sounds like, you know, getting stronger support across the state might be something that would help move this forward. What do you see as next steps, maybe even some things that listeners to this podcast could do to support?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things is letting your elected officials know. And so that might be members of the General Assembly. It might also be local school board members reaching out to them, and then letting the local school boards reach out to their contacts. I've had the opportunity on a couple of occasions to speak to state lawmakers. And when I explained to them that these programs were dismantled, and they still exist in some forms here and there in different aspects of state government, they really weren't quite aware of that. And they really weren't quite aware that the infrastructure of a statewide support system is there. It just needs to be expanded and housed in the right location so that there's a seamless transition.
Well, it sounds like having that infrastructure in place is really taking things further than if you had to start from scratch. So having that in place sounds like a real sense of progress. And when you are sharing this information, it's nice that is in place. So any specific requests that you would have of people listening? I heard you say, you know, talking to elected officials and just sharing the information But do you have any other suggestions or recommendations for people who want to support you to move this forward?
I think that education is the key. So spreading the word of some of these legislative priorities, some of the policy priorities, is first and foremost one of the biggest things that individuals who are listening can do. The second thing is, and this is tied very much into it, you know, again, I'm going to go back a couple decades ago. There were periods of time where the media covered lots of stories around that one of the state's residential schools was going to close. And that was, potentially Governor Moorhead's school, potentially one of the schools for the deaf. And the media does a good job of covering stories. They don't do such a good job of follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, we know that all three of the schools, they exist. They have students. Enrollment is open for them to accept new students. But I fear, and I hear some people say, oh, well, I thought Governor Moorhead's school closed.
Ooh.
And so, you know, we need to also make sure that people know that the school exists, that these resources exist, and they're available.
Yeah. Sounds like getting the word out is a big task here for moving things forward when so much is in place, and that there would be a lot of interest in that. Well, let's shift a little bit. Since summer is upon us, you had mentioned you have some projects and retreats and various things that could support youth and give them some opportunities come summer.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you again for the opportunity to share this. You know, again, so I want to start off by just going back to the past, and I want to say that this year, the Governor Moorhead School is celebrating 180 years of serving students with visual impairments across our state.
That's quite a legacy. That's great.
It is quite the historic institution in our state. And if you look back through the history books, I had an opportunity a couple of years ago when I was working on my thesis for my law degree. I had an opportunity to look back and dig through some of the state archives. And the school was originally established to help individuals who were blind obtain gainful employment. And so now, fast forward 180 years, 2025, and that is still an area that, as a society, we are struggling with. The unemployment rate for people with visual impairments is still astronomically high, and it's been that way. So how does this connect to a summer program? Well, about 20 years ago, myself and a group of young disability advocates, we were brainstorming, how can we improve things in North Carolina? And so we, back in 2005, 2006, we began lobbying the General Assembly, and we said we need a law that requires the public schools to teach about disability awareness, disability history, self-advocacy, and so on. And that law was passed. And we then quickly identified that, well, we need to teach people and train people about this law. And so that is sort of how the Eye Retreat was born. The Eye Retreat was born out of necessity of, well, now we have this law on the books, and we want teachers and school officials to provide that knowledge. But wouldn't it be even better if youth with disabilities did it themselves? We wanted it to be youth-driven. And so we began by having conversations around history, awareness, self-advocacy. That very quickly then turned into students needed help with going to college. They didn't quite know the have the skills. They didn't know the process. They needed stronger self-determination, self-advocacy skills. And so then our program sort of shifted to focus on that college transition piece. And we did really well with that. And we ran with that for several years. But then what happened is a group of students came back to me and they said, well, you know, Dr. Chase, thank you for helping me get into college. I got into college. I graduated. I did well. But now I can't get a job. And I said,
that's your original focus then, right?
It's coming full circle. And so that's when we added a career component to our summer program. And that went on for a couple years. And then finally we realized, you know, one of the biggest barriers, and again, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier, is education, knowledge. Some employers just may not be knowledgeable about what a person with a visual impairment can bring to their company or to their work site. So fairly recently, we've been developing and working on not just career readiness, but entrepreneurship. The focus there is, if you can't get a job, if somebody is not willing to give you a chance, then make your own opportunity. Start your own business.
You know, as I hear you describe this, the many opportunities and focus that you have, I'm thinking people are wondering how can they get involved, and there are probably youths who would love to have this experience and this kind of training and this kind of empowerment skill building that you're offering. So are you offering it this summer? How many youths can be a participant, and do you have a particular application process? Are there deadlines? What would be the next step for a youth who wants to get involved?
Yeah, great question. Well, the first thing I want to say is that we still hold one of our core values is still being youth led.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the things that I encourage anyone listening, anyone who And we define youth as, it's a very loose definition, but we want anyone who is successful, a successful person who can contribute to mentoring a youth with a disability who might want to go to college or get a job. So they can go to our website, that is eyeretreat.org, so iretreat.org. And our schedule is on there. Our applications are on there. The camp generally is always the last week of July. So it starts in July and it kind of runs over into the beginning of August of every year. And we use the campus of the Governor Moorhead School. So individuals come for the week. We have, during the day, we have classes. We have opportunities for them to go out and explore different employers, work sites. And then in the evening time, we have some unstructured social activities that individuals can partake of. So we're always looking for, any kind of person who wants to volunteer and help with, it could be helping us with setting up space or cleaning up space, registration, first aid, anything at all.
Lots of roles, yes. And if they go to iretreat.org, will there be an application for youths who want to participate and then also for people who want to volunteer and become involved with the camp?
Yes. So there are two applications. One is specifically for students, and then there's another one for mentors. And mentors is just our umbrella term for pretty much anybody who wants to either be a volunteer, be a group leader, because even if you're just a volunteer, you're still going to have interactions with students, mm-hmm. and we want folks who can be a positive role model.
Well, this is a very exciting opportunity, and it just sounds like you're giving students the skills that they need, not just to live their lives, but to really be strong advocates, too. Sounds very cool. And the employment aspect of it, you've worked in a lot in designing that retreat, it sounds like. And I'm hoping that we can maybe have you and maybe even students or mentor come back and interview maybe in a couple of months, and we might learn a little more about those opportunities, get to meet some students and mentors, and also learn some more about how everyone listening to this podcast can make a difference no matter where they are across the state. Because it sounds like there's lots of opportunities. Well, I just really appreciate your coming today and sharing this information and giving us some updates. And is there anything that you would like to leave our listening audience with? Any reminders or any suggestions?
Well, I think just in closing, what I would want to emphasize to all of the people who are listening is that we have been doing a lot of great work in North Carolina when it comes to education of students with visual impairments. We still have a lot of work to do, and I would, you know, look at the past and use that as a way to guide what the future is, because many of the things that we are doing today we've done in the past, and we're just continuing to build on that foundation.
So expanding on the success that you've experienced over the years, and minimizing the things that are kind of getting in the way right now and holding back that success. So, well, I really appreciate your taking the time. It's great to have you. And again, that's iretreat.org for people who want to check that out and see how they might participate and contribute. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
And now, an excerpt from the Winston-Salem Industries for the Blind, IFB Solutions. They have their edition of Impact, which highlights the transformative power of technology and training in creating opportunities for individuals who are blind. And there's a couple of spotlights here of interest. Digital accessibility ensures that individuals with disabilities can independently interact with digital platforms such as websites and mobile applications. However, many digital products remain inaccessible, leaving people with disabilities underserved. IFB Solutions recognizes the challenges faced, and they bridge the accessibility gap. Provide specialized computer training programs designed to equip individuals with the skills needed to thrive both at work and in daily life. So highlighting a couple of people, spotlight on Mike Moat. Mike is IFB Solutions Manager of Accessibility and Workforce Development. He plays a crucial role in ensuring workplace accessibility through assistive technology training. Mike is Manager of Accessibility and Workforce Development. He shares his personal journey and passion for an accessible workplace. It's not just about access, about technology. It's about independence and creating a future without limits. Since joining IFB Solutions in 2012, he's trained employees to utilize JAWS, job access with speech, and other adaptive tools, making career advancement possible for individuals who are blind. Training includes keyboard shortcuts for computer and website navigation, specialized instruction for software applications used in the workplace or daily life, strategies to retain information through repetition and practical exercises, and confidence-building techniques to ensure successful outcomes. IFB Solutions fosters professional growth, independence, and upward mobility. Kim Mike Mope works with Kim Schaffner, Manager of Programs, and Kim shares, watching students grow and become confident with their skills brings me joy. Knowing that what I do helps people achieve independence is incredibly rewarding. One student, Steve Mercer, expressed his gratitude after completing JAWS training. I just wanted to reach out and say thank you for all the knowledge you have shared with me. As I study for my final, I'm amazed by the keystrokes I've learned. Some feel natural now, others I rarely use, but thanks to this training, I can find them much faster. You all truly make a difference. And our next profile, Jackie Perea. Blindness stripped away my self-esteem, independence, career, and pride. I was left broken, constantly asking, why me? I felt trapped, trying to figure out how to start over. My 19-year career as a mental health counselor was over, and I felt like I had lost everything. My name is Jackie Perea. I was born with low vision due to microphthalmia, but 5 years ago, my world changed completely. A seizure during a battle with COVID-19 took most of what little vision I had left. Fear of another seizure, an uncertain future, and losing everything I'd worked for overwhelmed me. But at IFB Solutions, I found my way back to a fulfilling and independent life. 2 years ago, my husband and I moved from Florida to North Carolina so I could work. That decision changed everything. I started in IFB's packing and assembly department, which helps me ease back into the workforce. At first, I liked the skills to work as a person who is blind, no longer able to rely on magnification tools, but IFB provided the training and support I needed to regain my confidence. IFB Solutions is dedicated to creating job opportunities for people who are blind or visually impaired, ensuring that they can thrive both personally and professionally. After several months, I took advantage of IFB's incredible training programs, and this was a turning point. I found a community of people who understood my struggles. At IFB, I could express my frustrations without judgment, receive computer training. I learned how to use JAWS. And the training restored my digital independence, allowing me to shop online, pay bills, read restaurant menus, and stay connected with loved ones. We've run out of time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Deb Zuver for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.